When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Recording sessions with you on Tuesdays into a sort of therapy session.
I know, I don't appreciate it. No, I'm joking. It's very nice. But you know what I do feel like sometimes? I'm like, man, I wish I'm enough. Like, I don't know what the hell to say. Like, you know, if you're feeling bad, like, I hope that I am helpful in those situations.
I think that you're enough. Like, I think that's, first of all, that's so nice of you to be like, am I enough? Well, you are in the situation. I do still take medication and see a regular therapist.
Yeah, of course.
It's not like you're not my only outsource.
I am like a rest area massage therapist. You still need to go to a professional masseuse or a chiropractor.
No, you know what you are? You are like, you know when you go to the airport? Mm-hmm. And then you like, there's like the massage people there, like a chair massage. You know, it's not even an airport. It's honestly like in the mall sometimes they have like, I wouldn't even say a chair massage, like a person on the chair. I would say like the mall sometimes has those like massage chairs you could just like stick a coin into and it'll just vibrate you for a couple minutes.
So you come, when you come on here, I metaphorically vibrate you for a couple of minutes.
I don't like where this is going.
I don't like it either, but you're the one that brought it up. Okay. So in that scenario, I don't want to be the chair. Okay. But I think what I want, what I am is, I'm the guy in charge of the chairs. So I'm the guy at the end of the night. I come in, I open the little lock. I see how much money we made.
You fill your coffers.
I fill my coffers, make sure that it's plugged in right. In the morning, I just do a little switchy switch. Make sure that the chair is there for the people that need it.
I've forgotten what we were talking about.
I have no idea.
So last week I talked about my body dysmorphia and my eating disorder and how I am. What happened? What's going on there? It looks like you're scuffling with your mic.
Completely. It just fell off and I just completely lost my shit.
No, I'm saying, so last week I talked about my body dysmorphia and I talked about my eating disorder, and like my very last final toxic trait with my body is the scale.
Yeah.
And you know what I did after you and I talked?
What?
I removed the scale from my site.
Ooh. So it's still on premises, but you don't have
to see it. It is on premise. It is on premise. But in order for me to weigh myself, it's a process, a multi-step process, right? Before it was like, oh, I've pooped and now I'm going to go take a shower. So let me just step on the scale and see what's going on. Now it's like the scale is put away in a place that would be like, if I have pooped and then I'm about to go in the shower, I'm in the nude, I have to walk to a place and I need to put clothes on to do that, to get the scale, to bring it to the kitchen bathroom. So it's like more of an effort.
It's a whole thing.
And then
depending on who's home or who's not, you're either going to Winnie the Pooh it, just have a shirt on, waddle over, or you got to put on pants.
Do you prefer to be Winnie the Poohing, or do you prefer to be pants and no shirt?
So I sleep without a shirt. I sleep only pants. But
only pants. Your other OnlyFans account.
Only pants. But in general, I don't think I have a memory of Winnie the Poohing ever. Yeah. My only memory of I'm gonna throw somebody under the bus. But this is, thinking about it, this is literally 35 years ago. So I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
35, so we were six. No, maybe 36 years ago. So this is back in kindergarten. And I had a friend.
I know where this is going. I'm so excited.
I had a friend. And I have two memories, or a couple of memories. I remember him on his desk. This is kindergarten. It was the end of the day. I remember him writing down his homework very, very fast. I turned to him and he was in a rush. And I'm like, buddy, I'll say his name, Emmer, what happened? What's going on?
He doesn't listen to this podcast.
He's like, I really have to go to the bathroom. So I'm like, just go to the bathroom. He's like, no, I want to finish my homework. So he's like finishing his homework, whatever. I'm head down and I'm looking at my homework also. I'm just doing my homework. Then I just hear him get up and rush off somewhere.
Oh, no.
Right? Whatever. I'm 5 or 6. I have my own issues, right? So I get done with my homework. And then I remember, this is probably like 10 minutes later, I looked up. And he was sitting, you know, those desks where the chairs are combined, like the, it's
yeah.
like the one.
Yeah, the half desk. Yeah.
The half desk. Right. So he was sitting outwards. So his one arm was on the desk and the other one was on the back of the chair. And he was just wearing a shirt and completely naked, completely nude. Winnie the Pooh, nude 100%.
Why is this child in the nude?
Because on his way to the bathroom, he had peed himself. Oh. So he had an accident. But what was surprising was how he was like sitting sideways and completely open to the world. I was like, Emmer, come on, man.
have some decorum.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it. You pissed yourself, but.
Yeah, and we all have dongers, but still. Yeah, so anytime I'm on the verge of Winnie the Poohing, that's what I think of, and I can't do it.
I don't Winnie the Pooh around my house, if that was what you're wondering.
I really wasn't.
Anyway, earlier I was saying that I did put my scale away before we went on this tangent into the 100 Acre Woods. I decided to no longer weigh myself regularly. I used to weigh myself every single day. And so I have decided I weighed myself yesterday. I'm like, I don't weigh myself anymore. 24 hours ago is when I last weighed myself. No, I weighed myself yesterday, and that was April 22nd. And I've decided that I will not weigh myself again until May after Memorial Day. And the reason for that is because So, you know, I'm not a sports girl and I'm not an exercise girl and I don't really want to exercise because I don't like it. Right. One of my issues with working out was that and it's so stupid. It was like this fear that I had because when I would work out, I would gain muscle. And when I would gain muscle, the number on the scale would go up and it would really, really mess me up. And I didn't like it. And it would put me in a really bad place and all that stuff. Right. So I decided that the next month, a little over a month, I'm just going to work on movement and just do some workouts at home and try to be consistent with that and work on like movement and just like, you know, eating the same way that I regularly do. And then that way I will not be like obsessed with how the scale is responding to my movement. I will just be focusing more on like strengthening my body because, you know, our mom's got two bum knees. And I, at the end of the day, am built just like her. And I don't want to have those bum knees. And
we're all very poorly built.
Horribly built.
These are our knees.
I have no idea. Our knees are constantly touching. Thigh gap, never heard of her.
Nope.
Who is she? No idea. The number one reason I don't Winnie the Pooh is because of chafing. So like that's...
That's true. We need like bike shorts in the middle.
Also, by the way, bike shorts are the best.
Oh.
They're so good. Do you wear bike shorts ever?
I wear athletic shorts.
Well, you wear those like the compression tights underneath, right?
Compression tights, yeah, exactly. So
anything that like holds me in. I told you this a while ago. I started wearing compression socks. I was like, "What? Why have I been sleeping on compression socks? I just got them on a whim. I don't know why. It was one of those like, I think maybe this is something I need things on Amazon. And I got compression socks. And it feels like somebody's hugging your legs.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's so good.
Now, I can't go to sleep like that because I need to.
This is only for daytime. No.
Yeah.
No. What am I, a psychopath? Going to sleep with socks on?
Yeah. I didn't know where.
It's disgusting.
I don't know how much you needed that hug. About your plan, I wish you good luck on your efforts.
It feels facetious that you're saying.
No, it's not. I'm just saying, whatever you're planning for yourself, it is beneficial in however you want it to get. I would just say, you know, after Memorial Day, when you do take out the scale, first of all, you could just not. Also just not take out the scale, and that would be completely fine. And the second thing is, like, don't go in with any expectations. Like, really just think about, you know, because you're gonna end up feeling better because you're gonna be moving more or whatever. So
yeah. So our cousin's wedding is the first week of July or June, right? Which is right after Memorial Day, right? Is it right after, like, weekend after? And a lot of my body stuff right now is linked to, like, well, Aisha's getting married, so I have to look, or I have to weigh, or I have to be, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so part of me is thinking, like, maybe I'll say, fuck it, I don't weigh myself until after her wedding.
Yeah, do that. That's perfectly fine. Right? Maybe we just don't go to the wedding.
Wait, what? No, her wedding is important to us. But, like, at 6 weeks, right? So 6 weeks not weighing myself, I think, is, like, a reasonable thing.
There you go.
You know, it also helps, and I hate to say this because I mostly think that he hates me. My husband has been very supportive after listening to that last episode. Yeah. He said, first of all, the kids definitely don't have a group chat where they're talking about you. They don't have WhatsApp on their iPads.
That's true, because if they did, they would definitely invite him because they love him more than they love you, right, husband?
Yeah, because his knees don't touch and he has a thigh gap. He doesn't have flat feet like us.
Oh, no.
Anyway. Hey, the sun is out.
Oh.
It's lovely. I'm going to Los Angeles this weekend. I'm very excited.
Yeah, moving and shaking.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. But you know what I realize is that it's expensive to do anything these days.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is so expensive.
Yeah.
Like, I booked this trip a while ago. You know, I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to go to Nintendo World with the kids, Universal, whatever, all that stuff. And then I was like, and then we'll hit up a couple of museums. Each one of these fucking museums for these kids, it's like $70 a pop. $70? That's how much I feel like Disney tickets used to be. Was like $70.
I think so. So I think back when our parents got them in 93. First of all, I don't know where they got them from. I remember it was a shady side deal. It was some sort of shady side deal. I remember going to a parking lot and all of a sudden, next thing we knew, we had like a book full of Disney tickets.
Not sure. And there was that like family friend uncle that we whose house we stayed at and was like, we gotta go to, you know, that uncle's house and then he's gonna get us to hook up. And then I remember so clearly, because, you know, this is so, I'm so obsessed with food. That parking lot adventure where he came out with a book of Disney tickets was the first time I ate Bugles.
Talk about a core memory. Did you put them on your fingertips?
Of course I did.
Hey, I think maybe hiding the scale wasn't our problem.
I had never had Bugles before that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Bugles, they are better in my memory than actual taste. I don't think they tasted that good.
They don't taste good. And the thing is, a big part of that adventure is putting them on your fingers and acting like a witch and then eating them.
Yeah, exactly. They're too hard, right? They're too hard. And I feel like they're a smidge too thick.
No. They're actually just fine. It's just the flavor is kind of like only on the surface. I don't think that it doesn't carry through the actual Bugle.
That's what I'm saying. I think they're a little thick. I think they were a little bit thinner. You get the flavor.
Well, the texture is fine. The texture is fine. It's just the flavor is not great. I have not had a Bugle in probably since then.
I think I'm going to go buy Bugles today. I just want to see what's new.
Do you even sell them?
I think so. I want to see what's new in Bugle tech.
You know what's not good?
What?
And I think this is going to be a controversial statement.
Can I say it? Can I? Takis?
Takis? No, fuck Takis. I don't care about that stuff. That stuff is nasty. It's just going to burn your esophagus and then burn your asshole. It's so gross. No, I was going to say combos. People are crazy about combos.
Wait. Excuse me. You don't like combos? Do they still make combos?
Of course.
I used to love that because I haven't had combos in a long time. I haven't been near a vending machine that has snacks in a long time.
Shopping at a vending machine anymore. Yeah.
But I love combos. You, what don't you like about combos? Talk me through this.
I think that I don't like how thick they are. I think combos are too thick.
Too much pretzel.
Too much pretzel. And then, like, I feel like the pretzel to filling ratio is always just, like, off. And I feel like, I don't know. I just don't like it. I don't like it. Not a
fan. I think you're wrong. I think, so if you take a combo that has been prepared perfectly, I feel like, so, like, you know, it's not falling apart or whatever. Sorry, I can't talk. You keep telling me to stop talking.
I choked on my water. No, you said a combo that is prepared perfectly, and I just imagined you on, like, Top Chef being like, today for you, I have prepared a combo. A
combo that has been prepared perfectly.
Yeah.
So a perfect combo, right, is so the fillings aren't, like, coming out or whatever, and there's enough filling or whatever. It is. I will give you, the pretzel is thick. Now, I personally, I'm not a hard pretzel guy. Uh-huh. I don't, you know, like, whatever. So I don't like a hard pretzel, right? It is thick. But the filling is, I feel like the filling to pretzel ratio texturally is perfect. I think it's good enough. But the filling flavor to pretzel denseness is perfect. So I think the filling is seasoned enough that it overcomes all of the pretzel material, right?
I think the other
That is a perfect combo.
Sorry.
Sometimes you reach into that combo bag and you get a pretzel that's, like, half broken. So it's like half complete, and the other half, they're just like a little pretzel shaving. It's like white on it. Mm-hmm. And you let that sit on your tongue, and the flavor, the filling just kind of melts. What don't you like about combos?
I think that as you were describing it, I don't like the filling. I think the filling is grainy and, like, weird tasting. I don't like it.
I love the filling.
No. I don't think that I like artificial cheese like that.
Oh, like cheese whiz and stuff like that?
Yeah, I don't like that stuff. I don't like I don't like a cheese spread that looks like that, you know?
You know, you go to Los Angeles, you're a snob. I get it.
It happens. It happens.
Are these combos organic?
No. Imagine a place that just sells combos. I think that that should be a thing. I think that you should be able to go to a little eatery where you can get, like, a good cup of coffee and some iced beverages. And every day they home make some sort of, you know, a vending machine good. And, like,
that's,
you go
incredible.
In every
like a
day,
gourmet version,
like a gourmet homemade version of, like, Cheetos and Doritos and combos and fucking Bugles.
I got three words for you. Let me know if this excites you. Soft pretzel combo.
I would love a soft pretzel combo.
There you go.
But the thing is, a soft pretzel combo is, at the end of the day, when you go to a sporting event and you buy a soft pretzel,
yeah,
and
you can't get
some cheese with it.
You can dip it yourself. And then you just get it.
But I think the combo cheese is different than the nacho cheese. Because the combo cheese is sharper in flavor than a nacho cheese. I also don't like nacho cheese. You know what's crazy? Neither of us are stoned right now.
No, we're not. Are we? We're not?
Are you?
I am not. No.
I ate a little bit of from the bag of the gummies that you gave me about 7 years ago that are, like, hard candy now. It's basically a Werther. And it activated in the middle of my recording with Arthi last week.
Ooh,
couldn't feel my tongue. Like? It wasn't
couldn't feel your tongue. Nice.
Yeah, that's great. Anyway, I'm going to Los Angeles. I'm very excited. I'm not looking forward to the amount of cost of things. So expensive to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also hard when you're with kids because, like, you want to go to a nice restaurant and, like, eat some good food. But then you go there and, like, they don't eat anything. So then you end up going to some place that has, like, chicken fingers and pasta.
Yeah.
And the chicken fingers cost you, like, $13. And then you get a burger that's, like, just fine. What? It's so upsetting to me to spend money on food that doesn't taste good. I have a lot of food issues, but I think some of my food issues are also that, like, if I eat a food, it needs to be, like, worth, in my mind, like, worth the calories.
Is it the calories that you're worried about, or is it the price?
I think it's both. I think lately, as I've gotten older, it's the price because I am a working mom.
Yeah.
So
You said that like it was like I'm not a working mom.
Well, you're not a working mom.
I know, I get it, but I can't really do anything about it.
Because I'm a working mom and you're not. Yeah.
Do you feel like this, like this, like this concern about pricing or whatever, or I guess how expensive things are? It's probably amplified by the fact that you have kids, right? Because I know there's inflation. I know things are more expensive. But I also kind of don't, like, I don't really eat out that much. Yeah. I really don't, you know, because I'm just whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't have kids to entertain or anything like that. I don't. So I'm pretty much, you know, pretty self-sufficient. Do you think that it's, as a parent, you're feeling it more?
I think that that has some to do with it. I think also just, like, the amount of things that you need to get for your kids all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think about how when we were growing up, like, I remember going to school for clothes shopping in the beginning of the school year. Yeah. And, like, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, we it big the year that we went to Kohl's, because before that it was Caldor.
Yeah, well, Caldor also shut down, bless their souls. Yeah. So what are they supposed to do? But, yeah, like, we got the one shopping trip, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, if your shoes are too small on you, well, that's too fucking bad. Curl those toes and keep it moving, right?
That's why we always got half a size bigger than our actual feet, because you're going to grow into them.
Exactly.
Throughout the year.
I think that I've tried to sort of like ramp down on some of my like hyper consumerism lately also. Mm-hmm. I think like Amazon. So during Ramadan, I was doing this thing where I was trying not to like go on Amazon and buy things at 2 o'clock in the morning because I just like feel like I need to buy it, right? Like I was trying not to do that. And so I realized like I don't really need to be spending as much money as I do on Amazon for the shit that we buy. Like, I don't need to be going, like, if I go on a girl's trip, I'm like, well, I got to go and buy a new outfit. Like, I don't need to buy a new outfit. It's fine. Yeah. And then I buy these, like, shitty clothes from, like, some, you know, child labor factory in China or Bangladesh. And then it ships to me in, like, 3 seconds. And, like, it does horrify me the way that I consume things sometimes. So I've, like, tried to slow that down. But I think I'm also, like, really becoming disenchanted with like the excess of things that we have as a people. Like, it's like, yes, milk and eggs cost a lot of money and we should be focusing on that. But also like there's such an imbalance of what people do and how they make money and how much things cost and how people consume that. And it's also visible that it's really kind of fucking my brain up.
Yeah, no, it's all, I think it's all, there are a couple of things that are happening, right? I think the inflation is just, it's forcing us to think about money more than we were in the past or whatever. Or I think more than you and I were in our adulthood. Mm-hmm. I think it's right now, it's an actual thing that we have to consider. And I think the second part of it is, yeah, for me, it also kind of reframes how I think about work and what I do for a living and what I do to like make this money. And then what I'm doing with the money. And then, you know, there's always this thing about like, well, I know I make, realistically, for the amount of work that I do, I make way more money than I should, right?
Yeah.
And then even then, there are times when I'm like, man, I need more money. And it's like, well, what do I need more money for? I need more money because I want like this trinket or this thing like this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I really don't need it, but it's just, I'm just kind of conditioned to like wanting it or whatever, right? So yeah, man, it's a mind fuck, but it's kind of also the system that they put us in, right? It's like, I don't know,
it's also like, for me, it's different also because up until I was 31, it was like and that's when we bought this house, it was like, okay, well, you're gonna grow up and you're gonna work hard, you're gonna go to college and you're gonna work hard and you're gonna get married and then you're gonna save up money and then you're gonna buy a house. And once you have a house, that's like the ultimate, like that's nirvana. You've done it. You bought the house.
Yep.
Now you live in this house. Now you fix up this house and you put money into this house and you make this house nice and all this stuff, right? And then it's like, okay, well, we did that. It's like my kids. And then we were, of course, we had like kids in daycare and stuff. So it was like expensive. But now that I'm at a point in my life where I should, in theory, be comfortable and content, there is so much stuff in our, especially like in our generation, whether it's through social media or just like existing with your friends, there's so much stuff that people are doing that costs money that you're like, I don't know if I could feel content, because if I get invited to like a girls' night dinner next week, we're dropping like $75 per person for a meal.
Yeah.
You know, and like everybody's just going to throw their cards in and like we'll deal with it. It's fine. Right. Like it is this like, it's this like imbalance of how we make money and how we spend money. And I should be content with what I have. And like, to be honest, I love my house. I love being in my house. I love a night in. I love when I have like 3 weekends in a row where we're doing nothing. Yeah. And that's so rare. And so when I have those moments, it's so nice, but there's so much like social obligation, and that social obligation comes with like money, and not that I can't spend that money. I'm very comfortable to spend it. It's just that like it makes you feel like what is this for? What are we doing here? Like why?
I think that's kind of the nail on the head, right? I don't think for either one of us, you know, I think we're fortunate enough. Obviously, listen, we are fortunate enough to kind of do whatever we want to, right? I mean, realistically, you can go, like you're going to Los Angeles this weekend, right?
Yeah.
You were in New Orleans last weekend, right? Okay. Just saying, socialist over here. I'm sure it has a lot of, no, I'm joking. No, but
you go to Mexico City the week after.
Jesus Christ.
No, but see, that's messed up. No,
but
Why can't I just stay home?
No, I think, but that's the point, right? I think we can kind of do anything that we want to. We can, if you really wanted to, you know, if you and your husband wanted to live a lifestyle like this, you could go out and you could buy a Porsche. You know what I mean? Like, you can't buy a Ferrari, obviously, but you can buy a Porsche, or you can buy a Lexus, right? Or you could buy a Tesla if you were a heartless person. But you can do all those things. But I think what we're realizing is, even after we spend the money for these things, we're still not made happy by them.
Yes.
That's when you feel discontent. That's the reason why you're like, well, I spent $75 for this meal. I was fed. I got my nutrients in. It was delicious. The extra, I don't know, $55 I spent on this meal compared to something for $20.
Yeah.
Where's that $55 worth of value? Where's that $55 worth of happiness that I was promised with this plate? Because I don't fucking feel it.
Yeah. And I think that like people don't realize, especially for women, and I think like women will understand this, like when you
a man understands it.
Okay. But like, you know, even I'm sure you notice with your friends, right? Like when you're gonna go out with your group of friends and everyone's gonna go out, you just fucking show up. Okay.
Yeah.
Like for us, it's like, okay, well, I have a dinner I have to go on. I have to get dressed up. I have to dress nice. I have to put on makeup. I have to do my hair. And then like when it's a girl's dinner, it's like, well, I got to wear a really nice outfit. And I like, there's like a whole ritual that goes into getting dressed up and going out with your friends. And it does feel good. It's really lovely. I 100% believe that like women get dressed up way better for each other than they do for their spouses, which is great. And there's like a lot of like validation and admiration that happens like with women or with each other, but it does, it is one of those things where it's like, what the fuck are we doing here? What are we doing here? And I think it's also because the world is on fire.
Yeah,
there's a genocide happening, we're all making money, like we're all like, people are dying. And I think like all of it all together, I think I said this in a group text with our cousin. I said, like, capitalism is not slapping. It's not. The American dream is not hitting the way that it should, you know?
Or that it used to, at the very least, right?
Yeah.
Now, what part of that, because, you know, I think when you say capitalism isn't slapping, right? I think of that. When you make that scholastic point in your thesis, Why Capitalism Isn't Slapping by Dr. Neuser here. You ever change your last name?
Never. I said we, as if you were involved in that. When we gave you away to the highest bidder.
I wish.
Anyway.
Are you what do you think about? Is it your consumerism? Is it how you're working? I think the third part of it is the world being on fire, like the politics part of it, right? Uh-huh. Because it's like, okay, we are told capitalism is the way. We're told mm-hmm. that you should be, you know, because you can self-determine, you can, the harder you work, the more money that you make, the happier you will be, right? Mm-hmm. And that is what America is sold on, right? And I'm not saying it's untrue. That's why we moved here. And our parents were successful because they believed that. And you guys are successful because you believe that, right? Yeah. But it's also like, well, if capitalism is awesome and democracy is awesome, how is it that after 250 years of this system, I'm in a place where I have to vote between Joe Biden mm-hmm. and fucking Donald Trump? Yeah. Like, that clearly shows me that something is not working.
There's this comedian named Amir Rahman, and he said, a system where I have to pick between dementia, genocidal dementia, yeah. or cheeseburger powder Hitler... means that there's a problem here.
There's like, a problem,
Right? And I think, like, also in along with that, we're watching this, right? We're watching the people who make the biggest decisions, who are the most. It's like being at work and finding out that, like, the CEO of the company makes like 18,000 times more money than you, and then you think about what they do day to day, and you're like, how the fuck do you make that money, right?
Exactly.
How are the people who make the most important decisions in this country such fucking dipshits? And then you have, like, kids who are putting their bodies on the line on college campuses, like, trying to make a fucking difference because nothing they're doing is working, right? Like, people are like, why are these kids sitting out in these encampments? Like, what is that going to do for Gaza? Well, obviously, 35,000 people dying didn't do anything in this country. Doesn't make a difference. American kids are saying, let's put our lives on the line. Let's put our bodies on the line. Also, protesting against a war on college campuses is like not some new thing. This has always happened. And 20 years after it happens, people are like, oh, those kids had a good point. I wish we listened to them then.
Exactly.
Right? Like, they're always vilified when it's happening. But like, you see that. Like, you see, I'm like, I'm a piece of shit. I like go on my computer and I click clack and I zip zap and I send emails and I make money. I also don't feel like there's a lot of like passion there, right?
That's true. But I also, listen, I put in money for the GoFundMe, so I'm a good person.
Yeah.
I do the donations. So, and that's what you expect, right? You're like, well, I should feel valued, but you don't.
Yeah. And it just like sucks, man. Like, how do we fix this?
Are you asking me? How do we fix this?
No, you have no idea.
I have no idea.
Let's be honest. Instead, I listened to the Taylor Swift album. I listened to one part of it. I listened to half of it, and I thought that I was done. I was like, oh, I listened to the whole thing. I was wrong.
Yeah, there's two parts of it. Should we talk about Taylor Swift now? Yeah,
talk about Taylor Swift. Unless you have any other thoughts about the our existential crisis.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I want to talk about these kids on the campuses.
Yeah, right? Let's do it.
Because those kids, man, like, you hear all of these stories now, and you kind of see how, you know, different, like, media, outfits are kind of setting the narrative and what they're calling these kids and things like that. You see a lot of them call, like, they call it, like, pro-Hamas rallies or, like, anti-Jewish rallies and things like that, right? And so that's kind of disheartening. But like the more video that you see from these college campuses and stuff like that, you just, these kids are awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, that's all we should be kind of saying about them. Like, it is obviously, I know that there is an actual concern about anti-Semitism, and I think that's a real thing.
Yes.
Right? I do think that, because just now that this thing has been going on for 6+ months and these conversations have been going on, you know, you do see anti-Semitism kind of creep into conversations that you have with people all the time, right? So I know that that's a real thing. So protecting those students and stuff, of course that's an issue, right? And I think if you can't differentiate between, like, actual criticism of Israel versus, you know, criticism of Jewish people, you know, on the whole, then you aren't helping either side. So if you are pro-Palestinian, you're not helping. mm-hmm. if you were going to be anti-Semitic. And if you just look at these college kids and you say, well, that is an anti-Jewish demonstration, then you're also not helping because it's clearly not.
Also, right? Because a lot of these demonstrations are led by the Jewish student body. Like a lot of these demonstrations have Jewish members of campuses, of these campuses. And so this idea that you know, these campuses are now unsafe for Jewish students because of these protests, while I believe that there is likely truth because it's uncomfortable, yes, it also denies the fact that there are Jewish kids who are also protesting and are putting their bodies on the line. And it's just, it values one type of Jewish person over another. And if you're going to say you unequivocally stand against anti-Semitism, but you are going to then stand only with those kids who are saying that they feel aggressed upon, but not the kids who are fighting for the end of an oppression of a different kind of people. Then exactly. It's a problem. It's a big problem.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, the way that I look at these young kids now, I think they grew up with the internet. But I think more importantly, they know how to get information probably a whole lot faster than we do, even though we're young, I guess, relatively. I grew up on the internet. I grew up with a 288 modem. I think you also did.
Yeah, we grew up in the same house.
We did, yeah. I don't remember us allowing you on the internet for the first
time. No, I was allowed. Yeah.
There you go. But I think these kids are also emotionally smart, right? So they look at the situation, and it's not a lot of them are Muslim, so because you hear like Arabic chants and Urdu chants and things like that. But I think for the most part, these are just smart kids that look at a situation. They see oppressors. They see people that are at a technological and a financial and, you know, and like a power disadvantage that have been ruled over for the last 75 years. And they're just like, we're not going to take the narrative that you told us. That's all this is.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I think classes are getting canceled now and all those things are happening, right? And they were like, well, this is, you know, dangerous and this isn't what college is supposed to be for. But it's like, no, this is exactly what college is supposed to be for, right? Like, it's like, so for like these kids, like, yeah, sure. I mean, I'm sure your parents spent a lot of money putting, you know, getting you into Columbia or whatever. But I think good parents also know that you go to college for more than just like a vocational degree, right? Like this is where you kind of determine what kind of person you're going to
be. Yeah. So. If you don't know what's going on, Columbia University and NYU also, and I believe now at Yale, the SJP organizations of these schools that have already been under a lot of scrutiny, a lot of them had to be shut down, a lot of them were defunded, a lot of them were, like, a lot of these students had action taken against them. They decided to do a sit-in, and it was a very peaceful sit-in. Now, I will say this, that there are also people out on the streets who are not Columbia students or Yale students or NYU students who are being assholes, because that is going to happen. And we've mentioned this every single time we talk about this, is that for us to say that there's not anti-Semitism mixed into some of these pro-Palestinian spaces would be a lie, because we've heard it ourselves. It does happen, right?
Yeah.
But the students themselves that are on campus were doing a peaceful protest. So when you see stuff, depending on which, you know, echo chamber you exist in, if you see stuff where they're like, oh, there's, you know, kids chanting like, you know, long live Hamas on campus, they're not. Those aren't kids on campus. Yeah. Those are people out on the street. But it's going to, depending on how the video is labeled and who's sending it to you, you're going to believe at face value that that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's not, right? But those students who are protesting on campus, they're allowed to be there. That's their right to free speech. They are allowed to be there. They're allowed to sit there. They're allowed to protest. They're allowed to protest our government sending money and funding a genocide of another people. They're allowed to protest that. That is their right. These kids were arrested, and they can't be arrested for sitting on campus as students and using the space that you're publicly allowed to be in. But what Columbia did is they suspended every student that was out there, and then they charged those students with trespassing, because once you're suspended, you're not allowed to be on campus. And then they got the NYPD to arrest them. You have to understand the level of like effort that takes in an institution for those moves to be made, and how many people need to go through and do the thing to make all that happen, and how fucked up it is that most of those people that are already doing that are like fully grown adults. So you have grown adults who are sitting there making all these decisions, and at no point did somebody say, this is not a good idea. Like, we shouldn't be doing this to the students.
Exactly.
And it's like that, I think all of that, like, it scares me. As a parent, it terrifies me. Like, my kid would not be, like, yes, I know that there's anti-Semitism and there's Jewish kids who don't feel safe on college campuses, just as Black kids don't feel safe on college campuses, just as women don't feel safe at college campuses, right? Marginalized people historically do not feel safe in a lot of public spaces. The point here is that there's one thing about being scared of, like, a chant or a stance. And then there's another thing about, like, you're a student, you live on campus, now you've been suspended, mm-hmm. and now you have been arrested, and your belongings have been thrown into the street, and now you're homeless.
Yeah.
For standing up against a war and the murder of 35,000 people.
For doing the most American thing that you're supposed to do. It's literally the First Amendment. Like, that's...
Yeah. And that's the part of it that I think has, like, been so, like, such a mind fuck here, because, like, it's, you know, Ramadan ended and I, like, got into the, like, the, oh, I'm traveling and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And you sort of, like, get into, like, the enjoying, as we say, like, the dunya, like, the worldly pleasures of existence, right? And then you see the stuff happening and you're like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. No, I think that's the core of it, is we are, I think we've been around enough and we've consumed enough things that we know what an experience feels like. Like, you're going on vacation this week. I think you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get there, right? I'm sure. Yeah,
we're going to fight while we're packing. We're going to fight on the way to the airport. I'm going to scream at my kids in the airplane. I'm going to tell them to shut up. They're going to ask me every 45 minutes if we're there yet.
Yeah.
We're going to get everybody angry. The rental car will take way too long. We'll get the rental car. We'll get to the hotel. And the kids will be like, I'm hungry. And we won't be able to get in our room because I'm not paying for early check-in.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I
could. You may not love them. You may not love them.
Yeah.
No, and then at the end of it, you're supposed, like, when you were, I'm sure when you were planning this thing and you were like, I will fork over thousands of dollars for this thing, right? You were like, in your mind, you were like, my kids are going to appreciate this so much.
They won't.
And they are going to love me so much as a result. I am such a good parent. And, you know, to be honest, I think your kids are going to have a great time. I think your kids are going to have a great memory or whatever. But I think after you come back, you are going to be like, well, it's a lot of money I just spent.
Yeah. And it's like, were these kids happier even when they were home? Probably. Like, the older I get, the more I turn into our parents. It's like... You know, like we always say, like, like, just sit at home. Just stay at home. What's the big deal? Where are you going? What do you mean? Why can't you just be happy with the things that you have? Anyway.
I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty content with the things.
Okay, well, I don't, nobody gives a shit about how you feel, okay? Anyway.
Thank you for having me on.
Giving a shit. Let's talk about Taylor Swift's 31 song anthropology. Is that what it's called? Anthology.
Anthology. Anthropology is a study of old things, right?
Yeah.
Neither one of us should be employed.
No, how dumb we are. Honestly, I worry about the day my employer will find this podcast.
Yeah.
You listened to the whole thing, all 31 songs?
I finished the 31st song today, actually, on my jaunt. Yeah. I finished the first. I didn't realize that it was a double album. So I heard the first one. The entire time I was like, okay, I heard it. And then I was like, oh, it's 31 songs. And then I found the actual full thing.
What are your thoughts about it?
You know, it was good. I enjoy a Taylor Swift song as much as the next guy. I would not call myself a Swiftie by any measure, I don't think, because I don't believe that I have the required devotion to her. But Taylor Swift can write a really poppy, fun song, and she's really, really talented. I think where I stand with her now is I have 100% adoration for Taylor Swift. I love her. Like, she is obviously a very talented artist. Uh-huh. She is obviously somebody that's very, what do you call it when somebody is very, when they make a lot of things, not proficient,
profound.
Not productive. Well, it'll come to me later. Okay. But she can make a lot of great content.
Prolific.
She's prolific in her songwriting, like 31 songs, just like that. And they're all pretty fantastic. Uh-huh. The one thing that I realize is I have 0% empathy for Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like everything. So like she deserves everything that she gets in terms of like her standing as a pop artist and as a celebrity and the money that she makes. 100%. But the part of her celebrity, which is like the narrative, which is like the gossip part, all of that stuff, I have zero empathy for her.
No,
because what it turns out is like 99% of the things that I know about Taylor Swift, I know because Taylor Swift wants me to know them. Like she is completely in charge of her narrative. She knows exactly what a song is going to do. She knows what kind of engagement it's going to do online.
Yeah.
She knows how her fans are going to react to it. She knows some fans are going to overreact to it.
Yeah. Right?
And she still does it because she knows that this is marketing, which is her prerogative. I think she's completely right to do it. But that's what I came away, because I think the album is very like, you know, I think she's pretty open about the gossip.
Yes. Right? Yes. So that was one thing, like I listened to this album and I was like, I've always said this before, I would love it if Taylor Swift just like leaned into how fucking unhinged she is. And in this album, she said, here's 31 songs about heartbreak that I went through dating a Nazi adjacent guy secretly for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, like she has a song about Travis Kelce already. Like I like the fact that she like leaned into this. Like she was like, this is who I am. Here's all the music. There's like no guessing what these songs are about anymore. Yep. Right? Like she has a song called Thank You, Amy, and it's about Kim Kardashian. Like it's very obvious. She's not even pretending to hide it anymore. Yeah. And I think like I actually appreciate and respect her so much more as a absolute lunatic.
Yeah.
That she is leaning into it. The part about Taylor Swift that I still hate the most is not Taylor Swift herself, because like you said, she's talented. I don't think that she makes the most amazing music, but I think she makes good music, right?
Yeah.
I have never really, besides Shake It Off, I've never heard a Taylor Swift song that I've turned off, right?
Yeah.
Very good. But her fans are so annoying. And the thing is, her fans, and this is not going to do well for me with the white women already complaining that I always complain about them. But you
can I go off camera for this?
Yeah, you can defend them as, you know, defender of the whites. But there is like, it's this particular kind, is this demographic of millennial women who wear like, you know, who are obsessed with Stanley Cups and listen to true crime podcasts and like listen to Taylor Swift and like are like, you know, Target wine moms. Like there's just this very particular type of woman who has like also severe main character syndrome. And I think Taylor Swift being the kind of artist she is, where she makes every listener think that they're in on a secret with her and they're her best friend, she turns her listeners into the main character while she herself is also somebody with main character syndrome. And so they're like feeding each other's like this like obsession with each other.
Just mushrooms. It's amazing.
It's like, and it's so annoying, right? Like that's so annoying. Like I think that's the part of it that like I really can't stand. But I also realize that a lot of people who listen to Taylor Swift, like especially a lot of the people who are like, this is amazing. Like I can't believe that you can't deny that she's just like so smart. She's such an incredible songwriter. It's like you listen to the lyrics, like they're not that amazing. Like the lyrics
are very catchy.
The songs are catchy, but I'm saying like the lyrics of the people are talking about her being like a lyricist, right? Like a Bob Dylan type. And it's like she still uses like, you know, words like cringe and like all this stuff and like ick, like in her songs, right? I think the thing is that like a lot of people who listen to Taylor Swift have never really listened to somebody like Bob Dylan or John Lennon or the Beatles. Like they've never, or Bruce Springsteen, right? Like they've not ever experienced an artist who writes music the way that like really talented, good, like classic songwriters wrote. Because in our generation, if you think about pop music in our generation, we really don't have that, right? Like we don't have artists like that anymore. So for people born in the 90s or 80s or into the 2000s, Taylor Swift is the only pop artist who is doing stuff like that for them. And so they've never experienced it before. So to them, it's like, wow, she's incredibly talented because we've never heard this before. And it's like, you didn't hear it because you never went out there because this is all you knew. But like Florence and the Machine is on that song Florida. Yeah. There was an article that was like, get to know who Florence is, the artist featured on. Get to know who Florence is. Are you kidding me? That's like if Beyonce came out with, when she came out with her version of Jolene and was like, let me get you guys on Dolly Parton. Like, it's like they act like they're the first ones to know about a thing. And Taylor makes them think that they're the first ones to know about it. No. And that part of it is unbelievably annoying. But the music, it's good enough for background music for work. It's perfect for music for background while working.
So I'll say a couple of things. Number one, I don't think you should be afraid of just white women when you describe the Taylor Swift fans, because I get it with the Stanley Cups and the wine coolers and all that stuff. Because, yes, I do imagine a white woman in that scenario. Also, but there are also piece of shit,
okay,
you know, other types of women that are that do that. Right. So I'm just saying. But the other thing, here's what I'll say about Taylor Swift as a lyricist. Right. I don't know how complicated or how complex her songwriting is, but she is a talented storyteller. So when she is writing those long songs or whatever, right? She writes it in a way that I get interested and I want to hear about where the story's going, right?
Yeah.
The problem is, so let's say if we take that Kim Kardashian song, right? It's kind of what you're talking about. Taylor Swift painting Kim Kardashian as some sort of small town bully that bullied her in high school, and you know, the local papers and how hard it was for Taylor Swift, and all the while knowing that her fans, by the way, she tried to disguise it by calling the song Thank You Amy, and then the K-I-M is like capitalized.
An insane person.
She's a crazy person. That's what a crazy person does.
What an enhancement. So yeah.
And you're like, Taylor, you made $1 billion last year. Kim made $1 billion last year. You are going to be 35 this year. She's going to be 44 this year. Like, painting this small town girl narrative is only for the fans. And she knows exactly what she's doing. Full on psychopath. And I respect it. I'm sorry. Like, I like the music. That song is a goddamn banger. I love that song.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's hard. I've always said this. Like, if she just leaned into being as crazy as she is, I think I would appreciate it. And this album, this like 31 song album is like, I'm nuts. Like, I'm not a normal person. And I think like, that's why I say the fans are the worst. The Swifties are the worst, because they're still acting like she's so like down to earth. And she's
she is telling us how crazy she is. So we are normal. Like, it's just, no.
You are also crazy.
Yeah, everyone is crazy. This is just, she's going to make a lot of money. And you know what? God bless her.
Yeah. It is what it is. And you have like, you know, you have two billionaires fighting in a song.
Exactly.
It's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
Again, what are we doing here, people?
This is where the money's going.
Anyway. You got any sports updates for me?
I do have some sports updates. What kind of sports updates do you want? Do you want a fun sports update? Do you want a gambling sports update?
Gambling?
Do you want a new sports update?
I mean...
anything?
Whatever you want. Hey, are you watching the... what is it? Playoffs?
Yes, the NBA playoffs are on. Okay. The NBA playoffs are on. The NHL playoffs are on.
Oh, we're not talking about hockey. No, thank you. No. No. But NBA playoffs are on, and we have the Sixers versus the Knicks. Now, I've understood the Knicks are a bad team.
What do you mean? Like, bad guys? Or
no, like they're like not good. Like, they're not a good team. Like, they're not.
So for the last 20 years, the Knicks have, probably like the last 25 years, the Knicks have mostly sucked. Yeah. They had a good year in 1999 when they went to the finals. And then like the early part of the 2000s basically just sucked. It was just terrible. Yeah. And then they were good for like 3 or 4 years when Carmelo Anthony was there at the beginning of the 2010s. But for the most part, they have been sad and depressing, but this year's Knicks team is number two in the East. So they're really good.
That's amazing. Now, we are obviously a Sixers household.
I was going to ask you this.
I came home last night. I was out visiting a friend. Hey, by the way, yesterday I went and hung out with a friend. Guess what we did? We just went and hung out in her mom's living room. $0 spent.
The best, right? Just
the
talked.
Best. Just talked in her comfies. Bras not needed. Like, it was perfect. Anyway, I came home from my friends and my husband was in bed. He had a little phone. He was watching. I was like, what's up? And he goes, the Sixers lost in the most heartbreaking fashion. I was like, what happened? And he told me about how they were up 5 points at 20 seconds.
They were up 5 points with 20 seconds. They were actually, no, they were probably up 5 points with like 27 seconds to go.
Well, okay, 27 seconds.
It makes a big difference with the shot clock. Right. Excuse me. That game was an all-time heartbreaking loss for the Sixers. They should have won that game.
Yeah.
And the Knicks basically just pulled it off. But really, they were also aided by the fact that the refs didn't call a couple of fouls that they should have called.
Well.
So, yeah. Now, this is a big series for us in New Jersey because we have the New York versus Philly thing.
Yeah.
Which usually doesn't come up in basketball because the Knicks and the Sixers haven't historically been good at the same time.
Yeah.
So, but still, you know, as soon as it's a New York and Philadelphia thing, it comes up. Now, you mentioned that you are a Sixers house.
Yeah.
Right? Do you root for any New York teams? Is that a thing for you? Proximity to New York? Has that ever been a thing for you?
You know, I do like the Nets because the Nets used to be New Jersey Nets. And so I've been grandfathered into them. And then, of course, like I like the black jerseys. I like that they're in Brooklyn. I think that they're like a cool team. I also know they're not very good right now. But I like the Nets. I think that's like a team that I would give a shit about. And I've been to Nets games. So that was fun. Yeah.
No, so it's interesting that you say that because I fucking hate the Nets. I am glad that the Nets have been a disaster pretty much since they moved to Brooklyn. Oh. So I don't like the fact that they left New Jersey. Now, granted, they weren't making a lot of money in New Jersey because New Jersey really doesn't have basketball fans. Also, the arena was in a really shitty place.
It was so bad.
It was the Meadowlands, and then they moved to fucking downtown Newark, and it's like, who's going to go to Newark to watch basketball? You know what I mean? But what it allowed for was you could get really cheap tickets, and then you could just walk down, which is what I used to do all the time, right?
Yeah.
But they fucking left, and they went to Brooklyn, and now I hate them. I hate the fact that, you know, they took the team away, and on top of that, they spent a lot of money. So when they first moved, they got, like, Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out. And then they got KD and Kyrie and James Harden and Ben Simmons. All of it has been a disaster. So that is nourishing me as a hater because it's like, see, for all the money that you spent, you're still nowhere.
You know what's the worst thing about going to a Nets game, though? First of all, getting to the Barclays Center is a bitch if you're driving. Yeah. It's the worst. Even if you're taking the train, it's really not that great. Yeah. And then parking there?
No.
No,
I don't like it. Yeah. But I was asking you the New York and Philly thing, the New York thing, because ever since we moved to New Jersey, right? Even though my teams haven't historically been New York teams, like I like the 49ers, I do watch the Giants and the Jets because they're a local team.
Right? Yeah.
And I think it was because we were in North Jersey when we first moved here, right? But then I also remember the fact that we were in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. So
I should have some sort of Philadelphia connections, right? But I don't.
Yes. And I think the reason for that is because when we moved to Pennsylvania initially, we had family friends.
Yeah.
And we had family friends who were diehard Philadelphia sports fans, one in particular. Yeah. And I think it was just fun to root against him.
Exactly. It was because we had a rivalry. He liked the Eagles, so I had to hate the Eagles.
Yeah, and it's cute because you guys share a birthday.
Very cute. And we once went to, you know, coming back around, we went to Disney once wearing
matching outfits.
Matching outfits.
Head to toe.
Head to toe, a sleeveless shirt and short shorts with a sign that said large and in charge.
I wonder why we have body dysmorphia.
I have some of those pictures. We should put those up. And then when we were walking through Universal, a kid went, oh, cool, twins. Even though we weren't.
He's 2 years younger than you.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. So yeah, I think that's the reason why I was never really a big Philly fan. Because I had to be anti-Eagles. I have nice memories of the Sixers.
Yeah.
Because the Sixers used to suck, but they were the local team. So, you know, you watch them the same way. So like the local sports channel.
Yeah.
That's how you follow it. So right now for me, I follow New York teams. Yeah. Right. So I found myself in the game between the Knicks and the Sixers rooting for the Knicks, which is awkward for me because your husband is there.
It's okay. Right? He doesn't.
But I think that series is amazing. The Lakers are playing Denver. That was another amazing game. But it looks like the Lakers are going to lose. But
are those still the Nuggets?
Those are still the Nuggets. They're still the champions.
Okay.
Do you like basketball?
I used to.
Basketball is the best sport.
I mean, it's fine.
Basketball's the best.
Okay.
Anyways.
Anyway, well, good luck to the Sixers and the Knicks.
Yeah.
The last time I paid attention to the Knicks was when Patrick Ewing was still playing for them.
You know, the thing about the Knicks is when the Knicks are good, basketball is more fun in general.
Yeah.
Because when MSG is like exciting, like yesterday they showed the game, right? Like all these celebrities are there. You just look at the crowd and stuff like that. It's just exciting. It's exciting when New York is good at basketball. So that's the reason why I'm rooting for the Knicks.
All right. Well, I also think the part of the reason why I was not a Sixers fan before is because I was told I don't know how much of this I can blame on the way that I consumed information, but Allen Iverson was painted to me like a bad person.
Yeah. So when Allen Iverson first came into the league, they said that he was a thug, but you know,
that was racism.
100%.
Yeah.
You know what's happened now that, you know, Allen Iverson came into the NBA in 1996. So it's basically been 30 years of Allen Iverson. Right.
Yeah.
And the two players that have probably influenced basketball players the most in the history of the NBA are Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson.
Really? More than Kobe? 100%.
That doesn't mean, you know, Kobe and LeBron are definitely better players than Allen Iverson, right? And they mattered more on to like basketball teams and things like that. But in terms of the culture, it is Allen Iverson 100%. Before Allen Iverson, you know, NBA players looked a certain way, both on the court and off the court.
Yeah.
It was Allen Iverson that, you know, came out with tattoos and he was like a superstar and things like that, right? So that has completely made the, you know, affected the culture of the NBA. And it's, you know, further than just the NBA, right? Because now you see more tattoos in MLB, you see more tattoos in baseball and all those things. So, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Congratulations to you, AI, for doing it for the culture.
AI is the best. So that's where your husband and I kind of agree because he loves AI also.
He does. And he hates Michael Jordan.
Yeah, it's so sad. It's so sad that I have to deal with that because I find myself in these LeBron versus Jordan conversations with him. And I have to talk down LeBron, who is a person that I love. I love so completely. He is my second favorite player of all times. He's probably my favorite person as an athlete.
Wow.
Probably LeBron. Just a great guy.
Yeah.
And I have to keep smashing him down because of your husband and his bullshit arguments.
You don't have to do that. You can let him fight his own battles.
No, what do you mean? I can let Michael Jordan fight his own battles?
No, you can let my husband fight his own battles.
I am fighting your husband.
Oh, I see. Because my husband is smashing.
He's smashing Michael Jordan. So.
Oh, I see.
I have to smash LeBron in return.
You don't have to.
I don't want. No, but I have to.
No, you mustn't.
MJ needs me to.
He's a bad guy. Speaking of Michael Jordan.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
What are you gonna say?
Well, I was gonna tell you, speaking of the Jordans, and this is our very last thought, is that, as you know, did I mention to you that Larsa and Mark broke up?
They broke up?
They broke up completely.
Okay.
And then one of the other Real Housewives of Miami, Alexia, her husband Todd filed for divorce against her after 2 years of marriage. And guess what? That weekend, right away, guess who's seen on the beach getting close with Marcus Jordan? Larsa. It's like Larsa was like, she saw that like she was the one with the breakup and then somebody else got broken up with worse. So she was like, oh, that's fine. Now I have a boyfriend again.
So how does this reflect poorly on MJ?
No, it doesn't. It just, I'm just associating it because it's the other, you know, Marcus Jordan, Michael Jordan. It's their family business.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it for this episode. I'll be back later this week to talk to Vanessa from Best Week Ever podcast about Bravo stuff and probably Taylor Swift too.